Friends, I'm approaching my reflection on the scriptures today from a slightly roundabout angle. You know, there is this huge event that's about to happen in our nation. Pope Francis will be among us in 2 days. So I'm hoping to offer some insights into understanding him and the visit. So this homily, as I said, is a kind of indirect reflection on his visit to the United States and what we can make of it. Now, every time the Pope visits any country, there is a heightened level of excitement, as you know. But the anticipation is even more palpable this time. As the days of Pope Francis's visit draws near, the Pope is getting unprecedented media time. And the reason is obvious. While it is true that Pope Francis is the successor of Peter, as were the previous 265 popes, he is uniquely different from them all. In his statements, his focus, his approach, his demeanor, and his style, he's certainly breaking the mold. Should we then be surprised at the attention he is drawing days before his visit to the United States? It's no secret that there are those who love him and that there are those who feel insecure about the direction he is giving the church. Today, basing myself on today's scripture, I hope to offer a larger and deeper analysis of Pope Francis's visit to the United States. Talking about him breaking the mold, I'm going to break the mold as well, just a little bit. There are 4 points instead of three. And moving away from my traditional style, let me read this for you so that I remain true to the text, which I've written rather carefully. So if you want to understand Pope Francis, the first thing I'm suggesting is that you got to understand what is at the center of his thinking. And at the center is Christ and the gospel in a very, very radical way. Now, for us in the church, at the very center of the church is the gospel. The gospel reveals Jesus Christ to the world. It contains the good news of Jesus Christ and the good news of human redemption. The gospel reveals the messianic message, yet a messiah who shatters every anticipated expectation. He did not come to abolish the law, but as he said, to fulfill it. However, Jesus simply did not fit the mold. Today's gospel reading is a great example of this. When the disciples argued about who was the greatest among them, Jesus gave the most unconventional wisdom of them all. He simply said, "If anyone wishes to be first, he shall be the last of all and the servant of all." If we must understand Pope Francis, we must look at him from this and other similar teachings of Jesus found in the Gospels. It is none other than this very Jesus who is his inspiration and focus. This was obvious in the first pastoral letter that he addressed to the church. It was called Evangelii Gaudium, or the joy of the gospel. In the very second paragraph, the Pope said, "I invite all Christians, not just Catholics, all Christians, everywhere, at this very moment, to a renewed personal encounter with Jesus Christ, or at least an openness to letting him encounter them." Then he adds the emphasis, "I ask all of you to do this unfailingly each day." In other words, more than anything else, it is the Jesus Christ of the gospel who is central to the Pope's thinking. At the announcement of his election, the Pope's gesture of bowing before the people to seek their blessing was indicative of the Christ-like humility and servanthood that is found in today's gospel reading. Since then, Pope Francis has continued to focus on the gospel virtues of service, love, mercy, and compassion. I am the least surprised that he has declared a jubilee of mercy for the coming liturgical year. Pope Francis, in this way, is bringing attention to the greatest message of the gospel, the endless mercy of God. In Misericordiae Vultus, which is the document for the indiction of the Jubilee of Mercy, Pope Francis calls Jesus Christ the face of the Father's mercy. And then he invites the church to be like Christ. He says that the church has an endless desire to show mercy. It is my understanding that in his statements about people at the periphery of the church and society, for example, gay and lesbian Catholics, divorced and remarried Catholics, immigrants, the poor, and those in prison, it is the gospel message of mercy, compassion, and the love of Jesus Christ that is uppermost in the Pope's mind. To try to understand the Pope without understanding the centrality of the gospel and Jesus Christ in his own personal life is to miss the very reason for his emphasis and message. Secondly, the centrality of the human person. The centrality of Jesus Christ as revealed in the Gospels lead the Pope to focus on the human person in the same way as Jesus did. The biggest surprise for the religious leaders of Jesus' time was the people he associated with: the tax collectors, the sinners, and the prostitutes. Their biggest complaint against Jesus was, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." This explains why Pope Francis, only 4 days into his papacy, celebrated the Holy Thursday Mass at a prison and washed the feet of 12 inmates, one of whom was a Muslim woman. The Catholic Church and the secular world were as shocked as the people of Jesus' time. No other pope had ever celebrated the Holy Thursday Mass outside St. Peter's. Even prior to his becoming the pope, he celebrated the Holy Thursday Mass at local prisons in his hometown. While this was not new for the new pope, this was certainly path-breaking for the church, and would set the tone for the future of his papacy. The Pope would, for the next 4 years, continue to focus on human persons, especially those at the periphery of the church and society. During his papal visits, he makes it a point to visit the slums, prisons, hospitals, and orphanages. Even in the church, his focus is on those people who feel left out. His recent simplification of the annulment process and the waiving of the fees for annulment cases is his way of reaching out to those at the periphery. I don't know if you know this or not, but the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, starting September 14th, has waived all fees when it comes to marriage annulment cases. In 1 week, boom, it's changed. Something that we practiced for years and years. So I won't be surprised if at the World Meeting of Families in Philadelphia, he continues to walk this pastoral and compassionate path. Unlike those who fear that Pope Francis is changing doctrine, Pope Francis' approach towards doctrine and the human person is the same as Jesus in the Gospel. When accused of breaking the Sabbath by healing a man suffering from dropsy, Jesus replied, "If one of you has a child or an ox that falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull it out?" By doing this, Jesus was not changing doctrine, but rather he was taking care of the human person in need. Similarly, the law prescribed that an adulterer should be stoned to death. The adulterous woman in John chapter 11 verses 2 to 11 was clearly in sin. She was on the wrong side of the law. Yet Jesus clearly came to the aid of a sinner and refused to condemn her. Jesus was not changing doctrine, but first taking care of a helpless sinner. Not once do we find Jesus sacrificing the human person for the sake of doctrine. On the contrary, he saved the human person sometimes at the risk of being perceived as being on the other side of the law. Today, many people accuse Pope Francis of disregarding the traditions and doctrines of the church. Nothing could be farther than the truth. Rather, like a father or a mother who cares for her children, the Pope is making sure that Mother Church is available and accessible to all. Thirdly, and I think this is probably where most of the contention is going to be as the Pope visits, I want to talk about Rome versus what I call Americanisms. As Pope Francis prepares to address the American Congress, there is much apprehension about the topics he will cover. On immigration, capitalism, labor issues, climate change, life issues, and especially the American role in a global world, it is my assumption that the Pope will speak convincingly, yet gently. He will be controversial. After all, what does Rome have to do with the free world? This is not a new question. American Catholics today are at home in this country, but this was not always the case. The free world has always been suspicious of Rome. Popery, as they called it, was symbolic of darkness, oppression, and religious intolerance. The loyalty of the Catholics in America was always suspect. The classic example of this was at the election of President Kennedy. He was asked whether his loyalties would be divided between Rome and the Constitution. His answer was clear. He believed in an America where no prelate will tell the president how to act and where no public official requests or accepts instruction on public policy from the Pope. He had to make that clarification. Today, the total number of Catholics in the US House and Senate has eclipsed all other religions. This means that the Pope will be addressing a gathering where Catholics form the single largest group. Yet, the Pope will have a rather difficult audience. Many of the Catholic senators, and certainly many of the Christian senators, are at odds with the Pope on issues of immigration, climate change, unbridled power of the free market, reestablishment of diplomatic ties with Cuba, the Iran deal, which the Vatican supports, and the Pope's more pastoral approach towards gay people. It remains to be seen how this address and the reactions and responses will play out. No matter what the responses, the address to the Congress will only re-emphasize the Pope's faith in gospel virtues. Americans, on the other hand, will have to discern how to balance gospel virtues with the American dream. Surely today's second reading puts us in a similar situation. James says, where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every foul practice. Where do the wars and where do the conflicts among you come from? Is it not from your passions that make war within your members? You covet, but you do not possess. You kill and envy, but you cannot obtain. You fight and wage war. Just think about the presidential campaign that has already started. To me, it seems like it's September 2016 and not 2015. What will the Pope say to us? And how we will respond is a question of great discernment. Lastly, the church relevant in the modern world. It was about 50 years ago that Vatican City hosted the greatest gathering of representatives from the church. It was the 21st and the greatest ecumenical council, the Second Vatican Council. The goal of the council was aggiornamento, as they said it, or meaning, or a bringing up to date, or a spirit of change and open-mindedness. The Pope's zeal in visiting countries around the world at this fast pace is one of the indicators of his intention to make the Church a relevant voice in our world. It was no surprise to me when it was revealed that the Vatican hosted secret talks between the United States and Cuba to re-establish diplomatic ties between them after more than 50 years. The Vatican was instrumental in this deal. The Pope's encyclical on climate change, Laudato Si, has won international acclaim. More recently, Pope Francis has put the Church in the middle of the refugee crisis in Europe by asking all the parishes to host at least one refugee family. He has spoken with great vigor for the rights of the poor and workers. He's also reforming the Vatican finances so that it is in compliance with fair and transparent policies. He also let the world know that the Church leaders who are lax of child protection will not go undealt with. The Catholic Church will continue to be a voice for the poor, the defenseless, and those at the peripheries. I am assuming a posture of prayer as Pope Francis visits us. For the Catholic Church in America, this is a time for prayer, for peace, and discernment. May God bless Pope Francis. May God bless the Church. And may God bless our nation. Amen.